Welcome to a world of thrills, a world of drama, of capes and tights, a world where death is a revolving door. Welcome to the Geek Matrix.
Welcome to the Geek Matrix, DC Comics review show number, this is 170, right?
This is 171 or Legacy Week 4527.
Right on. I could have sworn last week was 160. No, yeah, no, I remember now. Yeah, no, this one. Okay. Last week was 170. I remember now. Shoot.
I keep a running thing. Like, I mark them all down so I can look at it and go plus one.
Excuse me. Still a little sick from a chest infection. So I might be coughing throughout the show. I apologize. It's turned me down. I know I'm quiet enough as it is, but I'll do what I can do. Yeah, I am here. This is Rob, and you've already heard his voice. I am joined today by Josh.
Howdy, howdy, howdy.
And we have no Brandon today because he is off being an awesome musician. He is... Well, I think tonight is opening night, he was saying, for the musical, I think, at his school. His college, is that right?
Or yeah. I think you're right. If I'm not mistaken, it's one of two bands that he's in.
I just know he's in a band that they're doing the opening night of a show. I don't remember what the show is, but...
Hey, man.
Oh my god, this is gonna suck.
Did you hear about the Mexican magician who could turn invisible on the count of three?
Yes, he was gone without a trace.
Aw, damn.
I know that one. I've told that one too many times. Uno, dos, gone without a trace. Yes.
Damn.
Yeah.
I got you this time. That was funny.
It is funny. I think so, anyway. All right. Before we begin, I want to point out, right now, until November 9th on Epic Games, this has nothing to do with comics, but I just think it's hilarious. The free game on Epic right now is a little game called Turnip Boy Commits Tax Evasion.
Yes, I saw that.
Fantastic.
Hey, baby, Ashley, how's it going?
Hey.
So, I saw it, but I don't know anything about it. Tell me about Turnip Boy Commits Tax Evasion.
So I don't know too much about it. I looked a little bit into it. Graphically, it's very reminiscent of A Link to the Past, I think.
Really?
On Super Nintendo? If that's the one that was on Super Nintendo. I know there was a Game Boy version of that. But, like, the Super Nintendo Zelda. I think Link to the Past is the one that was remade, like, 15 times. So, and it's this world of onion creatures that exist together. And Turnip Boy, in this village, commits tax evasion, and he must go across the land and... I don't know. Either he needs to like clear his name or run away from the cops. I don't know.
Definitely one of them, though. Yeah.
Definitely one of the two, I imagine. But once I start playing it, I'll get a good idea, better idea of what this is about. But it looks hilarious.
I love it.
Yeah. Well, so that's gonna be fun.
Definitely need to hear more about that one for sure.
Yeah, might be a good game to stream.
It could be.
I see you thinking about it now. All right. So in other news, Josh, I posted it on Discord maybe 30 minutes ago, but I don't know if... Actually, closer to an hour ago now. I don't know if you got a chance to see it. I have good news and bad news. I'll give you the good news. Are you reading it right now?
Yeah.
Yeah. Final season of Letterkenny this Christmas.
Well, I mean, we all knew that it was coming.
Yeah, it was bound to happen eventually. But, oh shit, I was going to share the link. I forgot to share the link. I had shared the link and then I deleted it by accident. The link for the video is, or the video they posted on Instagram announcing it is actually really good. It's Michelle Mylett, who plays Katie Cat, just kind of walking away in a forest or in some wooded area to chaos b-boy style. Is that what it's called? B-boy stance. That's it. B-boy stance by Chaos, and it's fucking fantastic. Because I love Chaos. I was conflicted when I saw the video. I put it in the comments. Like, I'm sad this is the last season, but I love Chaos, and I don't know what to feel right now.
Right.
Alright. So that's coming this Christmas. Boxing Day for you Yanks.
No, we don't do Boxing Day.
Y'all don't do Boxing Day?
No, we don't have a Boxing Day. That's England and Canadian.
Fuck. That's so weird. I don't know. I had no fucking clue. That's really weird to me.
That we don't do a Boxing Day?
Yeah.
Yep.
That's, I think, so what, I think, what's December 26th?
Nothing.
No.
It's the day after Christmas.
Holy shit. I got that day off. Like, that's fucking wild.
Yep, that's all. It's the day after Christmas. That's all you get.
Wow.
No, definitely no day off. Not for a whole bunch of jobs anyway.
I guess because it's also a day of like sales. Like the whole thing. Do you know the history of Boxing Day?
No.
So the idea is, like, years ago when shops were all like small brow, and I'm talking like Victorian, like even like late 1800s, early 1900s time as well, with the shops very small, very usually family owned. Boxing Day was a day where the employees, who were practically slave driven, were given the day off and were given a bonus or something. And I don't remember exactly what the meaning of boxing was, but it's something to do with I think they were given a gift or something. But they were what the hell is the word I'm trying to think of? They were given a bonus, basically, is the simplest way I can put it, for Christmas, and that was their extra day off. And in return for all the hard work they did for the year, because retail workers back then were treated very poorly.
As retail they still are now, still but are treated group. Very
yeah.
poorly.
Yeah. And that's the whole thing. Boxing Day was like the retail workers' holiday. And now it's become a day of sales. Like, now retail's open. Retail employees do not get the day off necessarily because all the stores are open because everything's got a fucking Boxing Day sale. So it's kind of become counterintuitive to what its origins were, but at least you can get some good deals occasionally.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. I guess for you guys, because Black Friday is like a month beforehand, it's not really worth it to have two sales in a row.
Right.
Yeah. Eh, well. That's still weird that you guys don't have Boxing Day. That's wild.
No, Black Friday. Yeah. That's the big retail day. The day after Christmas, everybody's like wishing they weren't at work.
Yeah. So we all have that. At least I do technically work in a retail position, but I'm in the merchandising side, so we get that extra day off because we're technically head office. So I welcome that. I don't got to worry about shit.
So you're the man.
I get 2 days off in a row. Fuck yeah.
Ayo.
You. Great. I feel like there was one more bit of news, but I don't remember what it was.
No, it was Halloween.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. It was just a couple days ago. Halloween happened, and that was fun.
Yes, it was. Yeah. Your kid made a pretty cute Wonder Woman, man.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. We had her dress up in the same thing when we went to Fan Expo back in August. So that was kind of fun.
Right on.
Yeah, she was adorable.
Yeah. Let's see, my oldest here went as a Fall Guy bean in an inflatable costume.
Right on.
And we went and took him to a costume contest at the figurine store, the action figure store that's close to where I'm at.
Nice.
And him and his little brother too. And his little brother, he decided that he was going to get going to Spirit Halloween and get the biggest knife that they could find. And he put on his black hoodie and he put on black pants, and he already had black shoes. And then he got one of those LED masks, the with the crisscross X's on their face.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what he wanted to do. That's what he wanted to be for Halloween. And okay. I'm like, well, he wanted to enter the costume contest too. I'm like, what do you want me to write down that your costume is? And he says, the man that looks in the dark. I was like, I don't know what that means, but it definitely sounds creepy, kid.
Yeah, I love it. Children's imaginations, man, they're fantastic.
Right?
That's really cool.
I'm a fan. Mm-hmm. I think I'll keep them around.
I'd vote for that costume, not gonna lie.
Right. They didn't win. Liam would have got second place, but there was a girl there, probably about a year younger than him, and they had like this cardboard box up the side of her back, and they made it all look like it was like missing a head, and her head was like down in her hands.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and so she won, but second place was Liam in his Fall Guy bean costume. And right. It was hilarious because whenever he tried to move fast, he looked like a Fall Guy that was running.
It's those little legs.
Yeah. He's like, that's funny as hell.
That's funny. Oh, man. I do have a little bit of comic news. It's not much, but it's something. Last week, I think, just the end of last week, excuse me, very late last week, Marvel released some promotional images for the Ultimate line coming up. At least this time it was Ultimate Spider-Man number one coming in January. And I posted it in chat and I thought it was hilarious that Jonathan Hickman is giving us what we want. Because the promotional images say Meet the Parkers, and it's Peter and MJ with two kids, married, happy family.
Right on.
Whereas 616 Peter can't get his shit together.
Cannot get his shit together.
That's what the creative team and editorial have decided. They can't get their shit together and figure out what the hell they want to do with Peter, so they leave the good stuff to other universes. Why the fuck not?
But I mean, this, really.
It looks good. There's two kids in the Parker family. Coincidentally, both ginger. Which, knowing how the ginger gene works, is really rare. But here we are.
You're asking for Spider-Man stories to make sense.
Well, no, this is the thing that actually happens, but it is like you could have two brown-haired adults give birth to three kids and they're all ginger. It's just, it's really random and really fucking rare, but it could happen. It all depends on the latent ginger gene, but maybe it's Mary Jane's fault. I don't know.
Ginger gene.
Yeah.
Say that five times fast.
Ginger gene. Why wasn't that just Marvel Girl?
That was a good one. Wasn't that just Marvel Girl? Yes, yes it was.
Yes it was. And I saw today that DC has announced, I haven't looked at what all the books are, but various heroes are getting what's being described as a $10 graphic novel, manga style, manga sized. So it's a small book, and it will encompass various stories that we've already had from various comic characters. And the Green Lantern book is going to be Far Sector, re-released in manga size volumes.
Sweet.
$10 each.
I'm gonna need a Joe Moline. Awesome. I'm gonna need a Joe Moline action figure after I get through my Bat Family.
You and me both, bud. I'm not getting a Bat Family, but I need a Joe Moline action figure. I'm surprised that hasn't happened yet.
I have been looking online, and speaking of figures I want, I've been looking online, and realistically, if I want to spend the money, I can get the entire Bat Family. And the same goes for the whole Bat Rogue thing, with Bane would be expensive as hell. It's like $130.
Yeah.
But if I do basically $100 and under, I can get them all, with the exception of one, and that's Bluebird. I won't be able to get Harper Row because there's no such thing as a Bluebird action figure.
Yeah. And she, realistically, she was such a minor character in terms of Bat Family.
I don't care. So, I asked Holly, who does have a bit of an artistic side, though she is rather busy, that if I could pull together some pieces of an action figure for her to sculpt stuff on and maybe paint, that she would definitely give it a try. So yeah. I may get a Bluebird figure.
That's pretty awesome.
So is this Lex Luthor.
I'm fucking jealous. Because my Lex Luthor is broken. Let me see.
Oh, go the other way.
I like that one. I need to get that one.
I like it, dude. Like, I can't show you for shit, but yeah. I mean the detail on the plastic. I mean, I'm not looking for like any kind of textured feel because it works for the suit, you know.
Yeah.
But it looks, the detail to add to it looks awesome. I can stand him up like anywhere. Well, you can't see that, but I can stand him up anywhere without having to worry about him falling over or anything, and like all of his joints are real solid, hands stay on real good.
Right on. That reminds me, I never opened it because I'm so fucking annoyed. One second.
Oh no, not the Sinestro. Wait. Yeah, so Rob, most of the time when you order a McFarlane action figure, most of the time it's really cool when you get a Chase variant.
Yeah.
Because it's something very neat, very cool, unique. But in this one, Rob got Sinestro as a Green Lantern starting to turn yellow. I'm assuming that's what they're going for.
That's what I'm assuming too. It definitely looks that way.
But and it doesn't, like, it doesn't really look that way. You know what I mean?
I definitely get that feel, and I get what they're going for, and I can see it, and it looks cool. But I don't really want a figure for it, you know?
Yeah, I do.
Because I'm trying to build my Lantern Corps. I'm trying to build my Rainbow. I can't do that when I have a half-green, half-yellow Sinestro.
You know what you do? You build the good Green Lantern Corps, right? And then you put together a bunch of Rogues Gallery, and then you set them facing each other on the shelf like that, and then you have that Sinestro in between the two of them.
I honestly, that'll work because, and I'll show you, I have these two already.
Well, there you go.
So I can put the green and yellow in between the green and the yellow, I guess.
I mean, it makes it work. Crazy. You know. What?
I swore in... What was that, German? Russian? Who says Scheiße?
Oh, that's German.
That's German. Okay, I thought it was German. I dropped a movie figure Sinestro.
Don't do that. That's tiny rude.
Little Sinestro. Little, tiny little Sinestro. Tiny little Mark Strong with pink face.
Pink face.
Pink face Mark Strong.
Pink face Mark Strong.
Yeah. So maybe I'll crack open this Cindy tonight, and maybe I'll try and have some fun with it. I was really hoping for the yellow, you know. So I'm 2 for 2 on Chase variants, which I want to say is unprecedented, but...
I'm sorry, what was the... what was the other one?
Alan Scott.
Oh, that you got that you didn't want?
Well, that one's not so bad.
I'm you mean 2 for 2 is in as far as like getting a
Chase variant, yeah. But the Alan Scott Chase, a lot of people online did not like it. They still don't. I didn't mind it from the get-go. I thought it could have been better, but I really like what they did with it because they just airbrushed some green on it to make it look like a green glow from the ring or the flame or whatever from the lantern. I thought it looked really cool. I still have it displayed. I love it. But this Sinestro is just...
But this Sinestro.
Yeah. Like, if they were going to change the color, I get what they were doing with the... Maybe what they're trying to do with some of the variants, that they're trying to make it more of like a plateau. You know, just like a still image instead of an action figure. You can't really make actions like this. You have them doing this one moment and that's it.
Well, they've got that collector's edition Superman and another one that's a Batman that's like that too, where it's like it recreates a certain picture if it's posed a certain way and viewed from a certain angle.
Yeah.
And that doesn't, I mean, I don't get to have fun with that.
No. It's kind of weird. Like, my biggest hope, because this is the last Chase variant I could see from all the Chase, from all the collector's edition figures, this is the last one I was able to see. And I was really hoping for a couple of months that the variant was going to be just his black and blue suit from before he made the Sinestro Corps, like his classic villain suit. Because the design is the same, it's just a different color. I thought that would have been perfect, but no. Todd or whoever decided, why don't we do this instead? You buffoons.
You flippin' buffoons.
Yeah. I just gotta hope I find a Yellow Lantern Sinestro in a store somewhere, which is very unlikely. That will. Maybe one day. I'm just hoping they announce Guy Gardner next. If they do another Lantern figure, do Guy Gardner.
Right?
You have 3 Kyles, like 5 John Stewarts, 1 Hal Jordan. Technically 2, because you have Vampire Hal Jordan.
Yeah.
Technically three, because you have Parallax. Give us Guy Gardner.
Well, I'm wishing for you, man. I really am.
They seem to be responding to your letters, so I'm hoping you you wrote one.
Oh, you know it, man, for sure. That this is the Huntress that I've decided that I'm gonna get. Can you see that, Rob?
Did you send it in the chat?
No, it's. I was hoping that it's on the.
Oh, on your screen.
Yeah.
Did you click screen share?
I did.
Oh.
No, not in there.
It did not happen.
Well, what the hell? Weird. Well, darn it.
Weird.
I wonder if you can see it on the. Yeah, you can see it on the video.
Oh, what the fuck? Well, I can't see it then.
Oh, that's really weird.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's the hush that I want. The Huntress hush. Let me grab up some of these links, so I'm going to drop them to you in Discord.
I remember that Huntress you're talking about. I remember seeing it. That looks really good. And I think that is it for comic news that I'm aware of. Do you have anything?
As far as comic news goes, no.
That's all right.
No, I don't have nothing for comic news.
Fair enough. All right. Well,
hold on. I'm sending these to you. You got to check them out.
All right, I'll check these out. Holy crap, that's a lot of links. All right, the Mafex Huntress, I've seen that. That was really cool. Harley Quinn, Amazing Yamaguchi.
Yeah.
Poison Ivy Play Arts? Hell yeah, I'm there.
So the Huntress is obviously mine. And then those two Amazing Yamaguchis are Harley.
Yeah.
Holly wants the blue and red one, and I'm getting the black and red one. And then the next two are the Poison Ivy figures, and I'm getting the Play Arts Kai one, and she is going to get the one from the Hush line.
Okay. Oh, she likes more of the classic costume, I see.
Yeah. So there's that one.
Play Arts is the Arkham City one. I like that.
For Poison Ivy?
For Poison Ivy. We all know why you want that player. It's Poison Ivy. Come on.
Because it looks fucking sick. Are you serious? Oh.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, Play Arts is very anatomically giving.
Anatomically giving.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. Excuse me. I think I hit the mute button a little late on that.
I found a figure that would go really well with your death metal Wonder Woman.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
You're gonna have to show this to me.
It's the perfect counterpoint.
To death metal Wonder Woman?
Yeah.
Oh, no! Rob!
But they were enemies.
Oh, they definitely were, but I can't
I
do
know,
that.
You can't get BWL. But it's I'm the perfect so... scene, because that's why she was there. She had the chainsaw and the costume. I guess if you're going to do it, you need the gold one, but still.
Well, no. I mean, I wouldn't need the gold one. I mean, realistically, I have to get one, but I'm going to focus
Batman
on other stuff first.
Why do you have to get Batman Who Laughs?
What?
Why do you have to get Batman Who Laughs?
Why do I have to? Because it does. It finishes the thing.
He's not like, Bat Family.
No, but I've got the whole death metal thing going on.
Nah.
Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Dark Father, Robin King. The Batman Who Laughs and the Perpetua, but there's no Perpetua action figure. That would have to be created too.
Yeah, I'll say good luck with that one.
Yeah, no, I'm not gonna try that.
No.
So I almost feel like I can get away with not getting the Batman Who Laughs.
Yeah.
But we should probably talk about. Any.
Get the one with the wings.
Get the one with the wings, for sure.
Yeah. So, comics. We are here today, just the two of us. Short week, very small week. I think...
Short books, even.
Technically a five-week month for October, I guess, for comics anyway.
Yeah.
So we got four books we're talking about today with two in honorable mentions. And that means no bonus show this week.
No Pepe Halloween.
Subscriber... listening on our bonus shows, we're not doing a bonus show this week because there's just not enough content, so you're getting it all here today for
low price of free and it's a Halloween present. It's not because there's not enough content. We've been that petty before.
Yeah, what Josh said. alright so do you want to start us off with our honorable mentions then, Josh?
I got to one. I know you got to the other. I checked out the Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom special. It's got three decent stories that all kind of set up the new Aquaman movie, hence the name of the book. It's not bad for what it was, really. Three decent ones. Fighting bad guys and trying to set up a wedding, that kind of stuff. I would have gave it a 7.5 out of 10.
Right on. And we also had the Return of Superman 30th Anniversary Special. It was an oversized book. It's four kind of short stories surrounded by one longer story written by Dan Jurgens. The other four short stories are written by various other creators and drawn by other creators as well. But just like last year's Death of Superman 30th Anniversary Special, it's a look back at the Return of Superman event that happened 30 years ago. Original story from Dan Jurgens, taking place in the modern day, with Lois as the chief at the Daily Planet as Cyborg Superman attacks. And she goes out to gather some information, while Ron Shroop also finds one of Perry's journals detailing stuff. His thoughts and his feelings about the various Supermen that showed up during that time, and that's where the stories take place. It's Perry's interactions with the various Supermen just before Superman returned, and that would be Superboy, Eradicator, Steel, and Cyborg Superman, if you do not remember that story.
Oh boy, do I ever remember that story. Right. Well, actually, I wasn't in line at the comic book store. He had it pulled for me, but...
Yeah.
But, yeah, oh, yeah, Superman, man.
That was a fun one.
Every single issue, every single tie-in issue, bought every single week. Without fail. Every single one.
I am very familiar with one tie-in issue, and I'm sure you can guess what that is, because it's setting up another story.
Sorry with my memory not right now, but
Green Lantern,
but it is set up.
Yeah, well, that's what set up Emerald Twilight.
Oh shit, yes, yeah. Yes. Ha. That's kind of important.
Yeah. Which, if I remember right, it was 46 was the Reign of the Superman tie-in, when Hal went after Cyborg Superman and Superman was there and everything was hunky-dory. And it was really weird because then 47, he teamed up with Ollie for an adventure, and I guess that was their goodbye, because then in 48, he followed up what happened in 46 and try to bring Coast City back.
Yeah, you know, this is going to be a hell of an effort with Coast City and shit. I'm going to take a real quick vacation with my bro and me. And I'll see you guys in 24 hours. Peace. Deuces, deuces.
What? don't go to Coast City. It's going to die. Yeah.
Okay. I won't.
All right.
Fair enough.
Fair enough. Much appreciated. Yeah, that's it's a hell of a story. But this Return of Superman 30th Anniversary Special, you got one story per character, plus tons of pinups, tons of variant covers, and each member of the creative team of each story is names you will remember from 30 years ago, such as Dan Jurgens, Louise Simonson, John Bogdanov, Jerry Ordway, Carl Kessel, Tom Drummond, Brett Breeding, all sorts of people that were heavily influencing Superman stories back in the day.
In a big way.
Yeah, in a big way. So it's definitely a treat, especially if you're a Superman fan. We know one personally, and I'm sure Glenn had a heck of a time reading this one.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah. Definitely check it out. I give it a, honestly, 8.75 out of 10. Very solid.
Right on.
The only thing that doesn't give it a 9 is, despite the fact that all these creators, in my opinion, are legendary at this point, the varying art styles, which were drastically different in comparison to each other, kind of just like was a little shuddering at first, because you go from Travis Moore to John Bogdanov, and it's just jarring. Like, they're both really good in their own way, but it's so different, and you don't even know what's happening until it's happened. So that's the only thing that kind of put it down a quarter of a point, but it's still really good to read.
Fair enough.
Yeah. All right. Do you want to do a little commercial break?
Yeah, sure. We definitely probably should do a little commercial break real quick. Let's go ahead and I'll mark that down. And all right. That was one hell of a commercial break.
Yeah.
You need to take a break for a second or?
No, I'm good to keep going.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and do that then.
All right. Is baby Ashley still here? No. Anybody out there wanting to chat, say something to the stream chat, we can see it. We are here to talk to you too.
Oh, you can see the stream chat, but you couldn't see it when I shared my page.
No. It's really weird, huh?
Right?
I was on my leg.
I don't know.
Ow. What the fuck? I had a shower just before a show. Why is there something weird on my knee?
I don't know.
Stuck to my hair. That's really weird. Anyway, now we'll get into our main books for the week. And oh shit, I'm first.
Yes, you are.
Starting with Spirit World number 6. Just give me a second. I can pull up the actual book.
Written by that person, drawn by another one.
Yeah, exactly. You got it already. You don't need me. All right, this is Spirit World number 6. Oh, God, too fast. Written by Alyssa Wong with colors from Sebastian Cheng. Wow. Art from Hai Ning, colors from Sebastian Cheng, and letters from Janice Cheng. That, I was reading it the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. So, we're picking up where we left off. Our heroes are stuck up against the great demon in the Jade Tower that threatens to destabilize the entire afterlife and try to escape. You do get a brief history of why she's doing this and where she came from. And her whole goal is she wants to die in peace and have her afterlife to herself and actually get reincarnated, do what she wanted, and not be stuck here where everyone else is. But by the name of Wan Yujing, she's a force to be reckoned with. Excuse me. And our heroes are doing what they can to fight her off. We do get some revelations from the Jade Court as well while the fight outside the Inner Sanctum is going on. We find out that, and I don't remember the character's name, but the old woman with the jade staff that was helping...
Bobo?
Was it Bobo? Oh, okay. Yes, Bobo.
Popo.
Popo.
Yes.
Sorry. Okay. Popo that was helping out Xanthi. She's the one that basically tried to bring Xanthi back to life. And this whole story of reincarnation that Wan Yujing is trying to accomplish, we found out it was tried once before, and that was Popo trying to bring back Xanthi to life. Did not happen, and Xanthi ended up being half alive, half dead, as we know them to be now. the current Verdant Sorceress seems a little perturbed by that reveal, but not much she can do about it. So the heroes do what they can against Wan Yujing, but it proves ultimately fruitful, and as Cassandra and Constantine are down for the count, Xanthi's jade bracelet starts to spark up, and she gains new magical powers. Sorry, they gain new magical powers, which takes care of the gilded soldier, and they go straight to Wan Yujing. But instead of trying to fight, since they know that there's no chance of fighting her, instead, Xanthi tries to reason with her.
Quit coughing, and, Rob. Just get better.
I'm trying, man.
Jeez.
I know. So Xanthi tries to reason with Wan Yujing and realizes that maybe Yujing just wants that peaceful afterlife that she's talking about, and maybe Xanthi can help her. So they do just that. Xanthi asks Yujing's name and promises to always keep her in their memory, and transforms Yujing back to a normal state, not the monstrous beast that she has been the past few issues, ultimately freeing all the souls that were trapped within. And as that happens, the Jade Court arrives and promises to extinguish Xanthi, Constantine, and Cassandra, and Wan Yujing as well. But various other members of the Jade Court realize that maybe Xanthi has more than they're letting on. Maybe will prove a bit more use to the Jade Court, since not only does Xanthi have, jade powers within them, but also the ability to create things. So the court...
You can fold anything out of paper and then make it real.
Exactly.
That's insane.
Yeah. It's a great power.
But imagine having that power, but sucking at origami.
Nothing but rocks.
Nothing but rocks.
that was the only origami my dad could ever do.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Nothing right, so, but rocks.
he loved making that joke. So that is an ability that the Jade Court would find very useful and offer that Xanthi will survive, and as long as Xanthi helps to create things for them and do their bidding. But Xanthi counters with, I want a seat at the table, give me access to become a member of the Jade Court, and then I'll make you whatever you ask, but I also get to come and go as I please between the living world and the spirit world. And that deal is made. Xanthi may just become the new Verdant Sorceress on the court. The current one looks, again, a little perturbed. And that's basically where the story ends. We then see our heroes going back to their lives, and everyone is happy for now. Interesting ending. Very interesting. It's kind of half and half. The day is saved, but like shit's happening, and I really feel like the story is not done.
Oh, 100%.
This, like, we got this... a lot of answers, mm-hmm. but now there's definitely got to be a second chapter to the story. Where does Xanthi go from here?
This It didn't feel like the end of a story. It felt like the end of an arc.
Yeah.
You know. Now, is this over with, or is there, or we got more coming?
As far as I know, all three of the We Are Legends series were minis.
Six-issue minis.
Yeah, so the Vigil ends next week. I think it's next week. And City Boy, I think we have one more issue. And, Spirit World is now done.
Well, it shouldn't be.
I know. Like, to its credit, I don't believe there were any threads left hanging. There's no open plot holes or story devices. Like, they wrapped everything up. They just set up more stuff. And that other stuff is definitely more I want to see.
Mm-hmm. 100%. What kind of dynamic there is going on with the Jade Court with her in there. With them in there.
Yeah. Like, there's definitely more to see. I love Xanthi as a character. They rock.
Mm-hmm.
Of the three books that came out, like, I really enjoy City Boy. The Vigil is... I don't hate it, but I'm not in love with it. The Vigil, I probably ranked third. City Boy is good, but Spirit World was number one for me. Xanthi's got to be my favorite character of the new characters here. So I definitely hope we see Xanthi again.
I'm the same way. I rank them the same way, but the Vigil I do really enjoy. I just feel like it needs way more than six issues to introduce a tactical team with superpowers and all of their backstory and what makes them all come together and all of that shit. I feel like that definitely just needs more issues.
Yeah, but if you're doing a team book and you're trying to introduce all those characters, like you said, like, six issues is just not enough.
Right.
You need 10 minimum.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And City Boy, it's got a great story, good look to it, but Spirit World is just, I mean, definitely the shining star for me too.
Mm-hmm. It's got real life lore. It's heavily rooted in beliefs, and it's got just colorful characters, fantastic story, a wonderful world building. There's not much to dislike about it.
Not to mention the art, man.
Oh, the art's fantastic. Again, I would say, like, the best of all three books.
Yeah, I would too. I would too. In the same order.
Yeah.
I feel like it was pretty heavy in the caption boxes in this book, but I felt like everything that was there added to the story instead of feeling like, hey, here's stuff to read.
Yeah.
So it made me okay with it. Other than that, I feel like it was a good way to wrap up the arc. And again, that's what I think it is. You know, even as a mini, there's more stories there with Xanthi. Takes out the bad guy, ends up joining the Jade Court, and, you know, like Rob said, I need to find out what happens from there. The art's so great to look at in every issue. This is no different. I gave it an 8.25 out of 10, and I'm really bummed to be reminded that this is all I'm getting.
Yeah. Yeah, I give it a 8.5 out of 10. Solid issue, solid way to end it. I just wish there was more.
For sure, man.
Yeah. All right, now we'll move on to Detective Comics number 1076, brought to us by Josh.
Very well. Funny, we were just talking about the Vigil. This one is also written by Ram V, with art from Jason Sean Alexander, David Stewart Colors, letter Ariana Maher. The Asmers pretty much all but taken over Bruce. Arzen is rubbing it in his face what the Asmer can do to people, but Bruce can still talk. And he shouldn't be able to do that at this point. So that surprises Arzen. Meanwhile, Catwoman is putting together a crew to save Batman. She starts with Jim Gordon as her first member, and then goes to Poison Ivy for something she needs made, which should prove interesting. I feel like this part was pretty good. Obviously quick in the summary. It reads that way too. The art doesn't hurt that either, because it just flows from one page to another. All around solid chapter in the story. Even if there wasn't much meat to what happened in this one, it puts us on to the next part, like, really solidly. So 7.75. That was done really well. Back up, Brent. Say again?
Did you mention Azrael?
Oh, no, I completely skipped over Azrael being in there. Whoops. Azrael's back, dealing out violent vengeance.
As he does.
As he does. Whoops.
Yeah.
Back up. Written by Dan Waters, Christopher Mitten art, colors Triona Farrell. Steve Wan's on letters. This was a good backup. It was about Montoya deciding that since her hands were tied as a cop investigating a report from a woman who indicated her husband is a murderer, hands are tied, so she questions up and takes him out. It ends with basically her saying that sometimes she has to step outside the law, which is good. Even though she gave the question identity to Hadia. I need somebody dressing up as the question. Too good of a character to leave by the wayside. I think it was a great short story, great art technique. The coloring is pretty unique, but appealing. I gave it a 7.75 as well. Whole issue.
Is it? I thought that was the last backup.
Oh, was there more?
I thought there was something I thought had like three backups this week, or maybe I'm thinking of something else.
Oh, no. No, looks like I completely forgot the Azrael backup.
Oh, you're right. Okay.
Well, ain't that a bitch. I told you I was having a slow day.
No worries. It's a stupidly high amount of backups, in my opinion.
It is. Basically, it is Azrael coming back to Gotham. Father Valley is there, and Vengeance is tied up into it, too. Vengeance looks like that is some seriously violent vomiting. Some evil creepy guys and more violence, and then that's it. Let's see.
summary.
Right?
I forgot as well about, I knew it was there, I just forgot to read it. But you mentioned Father Valley and Vengeance, and I'm kind of curious because I really enjoyed their time in the spotlight.
Well, see, what I don't like about this is that it talks about not trying to force the system to obey. Instead, let the system guide him and it will tell him what to do, and that kind of conflicts with what we got in the last Azrael story, where he learned that he can be Azrael without turning into Azrael. So this doesn't really quite line up with that. So I do have a bit of a contention there. So I'm going to knock down the full story there. Let's see, there's another one. Oh my God, I forgot. Okay.
Yeah, there's one last one. But it's two pages. I can cover this. I again did not get to read it. But it's written by Ram V with letters from Aditya Bidikar. Story and art by Ram V. We haven't seen much of Rumvi drawing, have we?
I can't think of any time right now.
Yeah, except for
there's
now.
Probably an obvious time for me, but
really well done. But it's called The Summoner's Lament, two-page story, detailing stuff that's going on with Batman right now, with the asthma taking over his mind. But you also get the return of Dr. Hurt from the classic Grant Morrison story.
Yeah.
Batman RIP. And
I just saw that at Books a Million the other day.
Story. Was it the Black... Not the Black Mirror. Shit, I don't remember what the other story is. But Batman RIP is Dr. Hurt. So that is very interesting to me. And if you guys remember... the very first issue of Rombie's Detective Comics run, I was you guys, because I imagine Brandon was still here.
Hey, you guys.
The very first issue of Detective Comics from Rombie, at the end of the issue, I pointed out that there was the music box that was sitting on the Bat computer desk was a woman dancing with a skeleton. Is the dance with death. Which is basically the dance macabre in French, which is what
macabre.
You Georgian person,
macabre.
You're macabre.
Wait, are you telling me then in French they call it macabre?
No, not macabre, you English fuck. It's macabre. Macabre.
I feel like that doesn't sound like French. Bless you. I don't know.
But yeah, so that was the Dance with Death, which is what the story was in the first issue for Batman RIP, which featured Dr. Hurt.
Who would have thought it would have come all this way to tie into that shit?
Right, we finally come full circle. I feel like that was foreshadowing or hints being dropped by Rom V.
Oh yeah, which makes me go, how many fucking clues has he dropped throughout this whole thing that I have not gotten at all?
I mean, that was maybe the only one I got.
Right. So,
but that was a clear sign to me that there was going to be something to do with Batman RIP sometime in this story, and here we are. Dr. Hurt has come back. I really wish Brandon was here, because that would have been really cool to see, or really cool to talk about rather. But I really got to check out this Azrael backup with Dan Waters writing it and Liam Sharp on art and colors. It's fantastic to look at.
And that it last is. It looks great. Story,
like, I'm just looking at the without knowing what the story is doing, I just see that last page and I get excited.
Father Valley, Vengeance, and Azrael working together is an interesting trio of people, to be sure. And undoubtedly will kick out a good story. So I don't want to give it too much grief as far as that goes. But the fact that they are just ignoring what, you know, where Azrael is at as a character, you know, that always bugs me. So
I'm not going to say that they are, because Dan Waters has basically been writing everything Azrael recently.
Right. And whoops.
Like, there's got to be something here, because I'm pretty sure everything Azrael in the past few years has been Dan Waters.
This
I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure he wrote like every Azrael story.
Did he write the mini that we just did here a little bit ago?
Pretty sure.
Revengeance showed up.
Azrael, right?
Hmm?
It was called The Sword of Azrael, right?
Yeah, I think so, yes.
Not the Dennis O'Neill one. Yeah, it was Dan Waters.
Well, then something's weird. But anyway, maybe it's just a bad choice of words or the way I'm reading it. Could be. Probably like, is.
What is it about it
that is bugging me about it? Okay, so he's sitting there doing his Azrael shit, Defiler Sinners, etc.
Yeah.
And his monologue carries over into what he is, and it says it's not an act of vengeance any longer, but he's still swinging his flaming sword, which I thought was gone. I'm pretty sure it was gone.
I don't remember it being gone, but I could be wrong.
But then at the end, where he was saying the work failed, it was for nothing, because I did not hear what was being spoken to me. This time it goes quickly. The angel does not attempt to force the system to obey. Instead, he lets it guide his hands. He lets it tell him what has been stolen from him and from everyone in Gotham City. So it's like Azrael, or this is like Jean-Paul Valley is giving himself over to Azrael again, where at the end of that mini, they were like basically the same person now.
Well, that I'm just flipping through it now and I'm seeing some of the dialogue. I still kind of get that vibe that they're working together, like Azrael and Jean-Paul Valley are basically like
that's what I'm saying. After talking to you about it for a minute, I feel like that's probably what it is, and I'm just reading it
kind of
a certain way.
Yeah. Like that part where you're saying defilers and sinners, I'm reading that and I said defilers, sinners, things that should not be. It is the duty of the angel Azrael, and normally, like in the past, Azrael would be like to offer you death, but now he says to offer you mercy.
Yeah,
and that's definitely not an Azrael the angel move. That's a Jean-Paul Valley move.
That's true. All right, so I'll put it back up 7.75 then.
All right,
fair enough.
Just looking at it now, and that last page still has me stoked. I'd give that, if I'm scoring it back up, like 8.5.
Yeah. Said hell yeah.
I gotta go through that Huntress, not Huntress, the question story one more time. It kind of dragged for me, but I think I'm just not that into the question anymore.
It could be. It was a rather procedural story.
I think the problem is with the question, especially for Renee Montoya, there's no clear, concrete decision. Does she want to put on the mask? Does she not want to put on the mask? Is she handing the mask to somebody else? Is she keeping the mask? Like every story you go to with Renee Montoya, there's a different side to her. She's police commissioner. So she's trying to juggle two lives. Oh, she's police commissioner. She's against masks. Oh, she's the question full time. Oh, she's handing the question to somebody else. Like there's all over.
Pick a lane.
Yeah, I don't know what to feel about Renee as the question anymore, and it's kind of just put a bad taste in my brain for it. So I don't know.
Well, I get it.
My biggest issue, and I'm not so upset about it because Liam Sharp's art is fantastic in the Azrael backup. The costume is different between that and the main story.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the only part I don't like. But if I'm picking between the two, I kind of prefer the Liam Sharp costume. It's a little less red and it looks nicer. And the sword's different too. Like it's really weird. But
I'm having trouble picking between the McFarlane Azrael and the DC Direct Azrael, like the old one, because it's got he's skinnier and he's got the dark red outfit.
Yeah.
Sorry, I interrupted you because I'm sitting here thinking about toys this whole time.
I don't blame you. Imagine a question action figure.
Oh, that'd be sweet. I could do that.
Yeah, that's easy.
Holy shit, I could do a question.
Yeah.
I'm so totally doing a question.
The easiest figure you've ever made. Whole issue though, I think I will give it a 8.5 out of 10. Very exciting. Very, very exciting stuff to come. If it wasn't for the Renee Montoya backup, probably get a 9. Just the stuff with the question is leaving a bad taste in my mouth right now. I don't know how to feel about the question. I don't know what they're doing with the question. I don't know where Renee stands on anything anymore. It's really weird. like the blue wall might be the best story Renee's had in the past like few years.
Yeah, she hasn't really had much for stories though.
Yeah. And when I say that's not a dig, because that story was fantastic, but I mean that as every other story is subpar in comparison.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Like, it's not even like, this is good and this is also good. Like, Blue Wall is really good and everything else, not so good. Like, like, just give us something else.
Well, there's a Vic Sage action figure, but I want Renee Montoya.
Renee Montoya, that's fair. I keep bringing it up, and I'm going to bring it up one more time. I just want to know if you brought it up in your description of the Asriel story, the last page. Because every time I bring it up, you seem to dodge it, and I don't know if the last page of the Asriel backup, because I thought you'd be super stoked about it, too.
Oh, where he's looking at the Asbat armor?
Yeah, like his old one.
Yeah, like the golden shit.
Yeah.
It makes me wonder, like, where it's gonna... I feel like Detective Comics has now just become an alternate reality book. And I guess I just need to remember that as I'm reading this. But it will be interesting to see where it goes. Or if it does end up tying in with the main Batman story.
Yeah.
Like, we have an Azrael versus Batman 2.0.
Right.
That would be something else, man.
Not the case. Like, it definitely feels like you might... I'm going to be honest with you here. Between what's going on in Detective Comics and in Zdarsky's Batman, it's starting to feel like you might be getting your wish.
Regarding?
Like, Bruce just takes a back seat for a while.
Yeah. Well, I guess...
Let's the rest of the family pick up the slack.
I guess we'll talk about that here in just a second.
Yeah. that we will, because our next book, coincidentally, is Batman, Catwoman, The Gotham War, Scorched Earth, #1. And if that wasn't a mouthful, wait till you get to the end of the issue, because my God. there's a lot going on here. All right, just give me 1 minute and moisten my mouth.
Don't ever say those words again. That was gross. Moisten my mouth.
Moisten my mouth, yes.
What the fuck?
And just to extra bug Josh, I did not say moisten, I said moisten. Yeah,
I heard.
extra pronounce that T.
He's such a jerk.
That's how I talk. Nah, I'm not even doing it to Buggy. That's literally how I talk.
You pronounce the T in moisten?
I do. I don't say moist. I say moist. So why would I say moisten? I say moisten. Just like I don't say Wednesday, because that's not... It's Wednesday. Fuck off.
Well, I mean, I get that, but moisten is moisten, not moisten.
It's moisten.
You're fucked.
Oh God. Okay, so Gotham War, Scorched Earth. This is the last part of our multi-part story. I think the last part was the Jason Todd tie-in, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Alright, so this is written by Teeny Howard and Chip Zdarsky, with pencils from Mike Hawthorne and Nicholas Cismazia, inks from Mark Morales, Wade Von Graubadger, and Nicholas Cismazia, colors from Arif Prianto, and letters from Clayton Cowles, and a wonderful cover from Jorge Jimenez. And damn, what a cover it is. I gotta say, this might be my favorite part of the issue, is that cover.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fucking cool. Alright, so we pick up in Gotham City. I forgot both her freaking names.
Who?
Vandal Savage's daughter.
Oh, Scandal.
Scandal.
Scandal. Or Marquis should be preferred. Marquis,
that's it, thank you.
Marquis.
It's not Marquis, there's an E at the end.
That's female.
Huh? It's Marquise.
Whatever. Shut up, Frenchie.
Oh my god. It's gonna be one episode. I'm just gonna speak French to you the whole time and just you're gonna get so mad at me.
I just, well, only because I won't have any idea what the fuck you're saying.
Alright, so yeah, Marquise Scandal is telling the troops that the time is now. Let's go strike quickly, get those asteroids and get them back to Vandal Savage, and if you come back without it, well, you're just going to taste a blade instead.
How rude.
Right? Meanwhile, Tim is out patrolling along with the rest of the Bat family, but the Bat family is all alone and their individual patrols, and Tim comes across the various Gotham villains that have tech from the Batcave, and he is single-handedly beat down by 8 of them and captured. And that's
really ugly looking Two-Face too, by the way.
Oh god, yeah. And that's the intro to the story. But then we jump over to the Bat basement, if that's what you want to call it, underneath the brownstone. Bruce, Selina, and Jason are there trying to figure out the next part of their plan. Jason is starting to come out of his fear-based state and come back to normal. And Bruce and Selina figure they need to get out there and start figuring out what's going on. But then Oracle messages in on the Bat Family chat, which Catwoman is part of. Since Bruce does not have access to that, Catwoman lets him know that Oracle is saying that Tim is missing and there's an army of Batman rogues downtown with Batman equipment. So Selina hands her earpiece to Bruce and says, go throw your bat army at it, corral the troops, I'm gonna go herd some cats. And she goes off to figure out what's going on with the thieves she trained. Bruce swallows his pride and gets on comms and basically tells the family, I was wrong, we're family, we disagree, I can make peace with that, but your brother is in trouble, Tim is in danger, you go save him, I'll stop Vandal Savage. They head off on their separate ways. Jason left behind because he's still not ready to go. We see Selina then coming up to... What the fuck was that? All right, coach, take it easy.
I hit the wrong button.
That's okay. Bruce goes to the Batcave and discovers it ransacked, but also knows that Vandal was not able to get the equipment out through the regular Batcave exit. He had to drag it up through the mansion. So figuring out, using his detective skills, he had to break the clock open so it was stopped at a certain time, and he was able to track tire tracks out onto the street and asks Oracle to check out the satellites above Wayne Manor and track a certain time and see where if a van happened to leave the premises at a certain time. And she finds it, figuring out where that was going, as that would be Vandal Savage. That leads Bruce to Vandal's next point. Meanwhile, downtown, the rogue villain army is terrorizing the city, and almost all at once, the Bat Family arrives. But it's a bit of a struggle, because it's a lot of villains, and it's a lot for the Bat Family to handle all at once. Especially when they have civilians in the way to save. excuse me. Selina hitches a ride on the car of one of the thieves that has a meteorite fragment, and while hiding on top of the car, she follows it all the way to the Gotham Observatory, where she finds Batman, who's already made his way there, and the pair head in after figuring out what the plan is. Batman, while spying on them, finds that Scandal is activating some stuff. The meteorite is not just a source of power, It's a homing beacon. And on a computer that Scandal is looking at, discovers that the there's a larger meteor that is heading for the smaller meteor fragments, and it's coming straight into Gotham City, but it's way too large. It's going to turn Gotham into a crater. So the pair go down together, the bat and the cat and the bat, as they say, to stop everyone together. And they begin that fight. Meanwhile, downtown, the rest of the Batflame is having a struggle.
A terrible struggle.
against the various villains. It's proving too tough. I mean, even the Catwoman's forces have arrived. You see Tomcat get decked in the face by Black Mask, which kind of funny considering what's going on in Catwoman.
Agreed.
Yeah. Signal uses his new invisibility powers, which I think I forgot he had.
No, I mean that's not new. He bends light. He can control light and darkness.
Oh, okay, fair enough. It's been so long since we've had a story featuring Signal. I just forget his power set.
Tell me about it. Everybody shits on Duke. Not cool, man. Not cool.
No, there's nothing wrong with him. So he's on top of the roof where the ventriloquist and Harvey Dent have Tim strapped to a bat signal. At least it might just be a spotlight. And while he's invisible, he punches out Harvey, and the ventriloquist just kind of disappears. Mm-hmm. who fucking knows? So he frees Tim. Tim heads down and single-handedly takes down each villain using his knowledge of Batman tech. Professor Pig with Bane Venom. Firefly with freeze and heat guns. Scarecrow, he just holds his breath. Because what the fuck else is he going to do?
What the fuck else is he going to do?
Yeah. But then, as he explains to Dick, Batman wanted him to study, so he did. He studied everything that ever entered that damn cave. It was the only way to become the second best Robin, he says.
That's bullshit.
I was going to say, Josh, how do you feel about that?
Nightwing is the best Nightwing. There's two of them, and he's the best one. So he can't be the best Robin.
You're busted, man. I will never get over this tirade you have that Jason and Dick can no longer be honorary Robins because they graduated.
Jason can be because he hasn't graduated. He's slowly become less murderous, and he changed to rubber bullets, and now he's got all this shit going on. So who knows what the fuck's gonna happen? But I mean,
yeah,
he still counts as a Robin.
Once a Robin, always a Robin. Damn it, that's what I say. But
that's not true, because all of the people that were a part of We Are Robin aren't still Robins. They're not even ever a part of the conversation.
There was, what's her name in a Tim Drake story recently?
Right. Obviously, a lasting impression was made.
Dude, I don't remember most of the characters from We Are Robin, but the story rocked.
It was a good story.
Yeah. I just remember it's what gave Duke his start, and that's what matters.
Right?
Yeah. All right, so downtown Gotham is saved, all thanks to Tim and the rest of the Bat family. Meanwhile, Batman and Catwoman have their hands full trying to stop Vandal and his forces. Batman gets on the comms really quick and says there's a level 5 emergency. Meteor is en route to the observatory. We need someone to take it out. Oracle tries to do what she can to get someone on the Justice League or various other heroes to do what they can, but nobody's responding. And if Superman can't get it, we'd need nothing short of a thermobaric bomb, she says. Interesting. But that's when Jason looks at the Batplane, and, well, you get an idea of what's happening next. Then Oracle gets on comms to Batman and says the Batwing is heading towards it. And as Bruce says, that's impossible. I haven't finished and saw the autopilots. But then he realizes Jason is there, and he says his somber goodbyes as Jason basically says, you can sit with the fact that you were wrong about me. And it explodes, taking the meteorite with it, or the meteor with it, which then shatters it into various smaller meteorites. The main piece is still headed for the observatory, though, which blows it up, and there's just enough power there for Vandal and Scandal to get in close to it. Scandal goes with her father, but as Vandal says, we don't know how much power this contains, so I should go first, and that's when he betrays Scandal, stabs her, because he's a dick, and then takes the power for himself. But then he says the power is very different, and as he touches it, it explodes, and that's when we see Jason parachuting down. Yeah. Well, not a fatality, because Jason's alive. the ground around the crater gives way. Vandal goes into the meteorite explosion. Scandal is slowly falling. Selina jumps in after her and saves her, but she is slipping. Batman goes in to save both of them, but another shockwave happens. Batman is holding onto Marquise while Selina falls into the meteoric explosion, and basically everything is just fucked. But that's when Jason goes to Batman, and Selina is nowhere to be found. We then jump to 2 weeks later, where Bruce and Jason are talking. As Waller is there to... Waller and the government are there to study the meteor, but they cannot find any bodies. Not that they're looking for them anyway. Bruce has sadly come to terms with the fact that she's gone, and it's pretty much his fault. It's not Jason. Sorry, it's Dick. Sorry. This is Dick and Bruce talking. But then Dick goes on to see if he can still help Bruce, if this is Zur-En-Arr affecting him. This is Dick, right? I don't have this wrong, right? Because they don't actually say a name. I was kind of just assuming. Oh, it is Dick. Okay, they do say a name. My mistake. It is Dick. Sometimes Dick and Tim, depending on the artist, look exactly the same.
Yeah.
It's really hard to tell sometimes. So it's Dick. If it's Zur-En-Arr, Dick is asking Bruce, if it's Zur-En-Arr, we can help you. But Bruce says it's not Zur, it's me. It's all about me and the mission. All of you know what you're doing. You're doing good. I need to step away. You all can take care of it. I'm the one that's bringing the team down. My life just ends in tragedy. So you and Barbara, you are the ones that bring light to the team, and you two can really lead it to greatness. You're the parents that the family needs. It was never me, and it was never Selina. So he heads off, disconnected from the network, and disconnecting himself from the family. We then get a little hint towards his own future as he tries to track down Edward Nygma, who gave him tips throughout the Gotham War. And as he's trying to give one more tip about the Joker, potentially about the three Jokers, Bruce just stops the image recording that Nygma is giving him and vows to track him down anyway. And as he heads out into the night, he sees a lone figure watching him from afar and realizes it is Selina and that she is alive. And he leaves with a smile. And then in the epilogue, we see one of Selina's goons, not really goons, thieves, breaking into a house, talking to someone on his own communicator. And as he sneaks into a dark room, he allows to let the guy go as he realizes Bruce Wayne is Batman. And you kind of get the sense that this is the Bruce Wayne brownstone, and he is snuck into a hidden area where there's nothing but bat gear. So, bit of an oversized issue. Lots of story to unpack. First half I thought was really cool. The ending of everything was really dumb. I'm gonna say right now, they tease us with Jason dying. Jason didn't die all of a sudden. They tease us with Selena dying. Selena didn't die all of a sudden. And this guy breaks into Bruce Wayne's house, which should be one of the most heavily fortified places in Gotham City, just opens a window and gets in, and then opens a door, and oh, there's all this Batman stuff. No.
Yep.
There's no fucking way that Bruce would let that happen.
I'm with you.
Batman. There's no way.
I'm with you,
Batman,
dude.
Would let anybody just break into the brownstone and find a hidden room with his supplies in it. There's a fucking cowl and a Batmobile there, for crying out loud. There's no way. So that's some shenanigans.
That's one way to put it.
We don't know what's going on with Jason, but I imagine Matthew Rosenberg has a story later on. We don't know what's going on with Selena, how she's alive, what the fuck happened to that meteor. If she's alive, what the hell happened to Vandal? Hopefully we find out next issue of Catwoman. And what the fuck's going to happen with Bruce and the Bat family going forward. That this is where I can say, I can bring up what I was going to talk about at the end of Detective Comics review, where it looks like Batman might be starting to take a break from being Batman.
Yeah, he went like all anti-Batman emo.
Yeah, like Bruce is disconnected from his own network. He's distancing himself from the family. There's heavy Batman R.A.P. vibes in Detective Comics. They've got Azrael dusting off his bat armor. They've got the Bat family off on its own now without Batman, with two parental figures in Dick and Barbara.
Catwoman's army. Catwoman's army, mostly back with Catwoman. Some of them not, but
yeah, some of them actually went back to villains, but that's neither here nor there. But for the most part, like, Batman is kind of fucked.
I mean, I would assume that he's feeling almost unnecessary or perhaps he's not quite feeling like he's the necessary threat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's not that whole hero you deserve thing anymore. He's like, I'm too much or I'm not enough. Either way, this isn't working.
Yeah. Like, so there's a lot of teases for from both Zdarsky and Howard regarding both Catwoman and Batman.
Yeah.
A lot of teases for story going forward. I think the next arc in Batman is Zur-En-Arr. If I remember right, so we're jumping right into that now. But I have no idea what's coming up in Catwoman.
I mean, I don't know about jumping right into it. We've been heading there for a while now.
Yeah, teasing towards it, but like, I mean, like, the next thing is just there's an arc they've been teasing for a while. It's Zur-En-Arr centric and is just Bruce and Zur-En-Arr kind of fighting for control in a way. But I think the one part about this entire ordeal that I'm most interested in is Jason. His story was the most interesting story of this entire arc, and it was the most interesting part of this issue.
Well, it ends in the next issue of The Man Who Stopped Laughing. That's the conclusion of Jason's arc.
Yeah. Supposedly. So, we'll definitely see what happens. And that's next week, if I remember right, so we'll see what happens there. I'm very excited to see what happens with Jason going forward. As for the rest of the issue, art was really good throughout. The part with Tim was really cool, taking out all the villains single-handedly.
Because he's the best Robin.
He is the best Robin.
Ah, he's the best Robin.
Yeah. All in all, though, like, honestly, I'm going to give this a... Fucking 5.5.
Yeah, man. I'm honestly okay, team up in different directions. We're going to drop Zurinar from thinking that you are all dead weight. Because you can see past that for now. Jason dead, no. Selena dead, no. Nope. Vandal dead, no, probably nope. Not, but we're not going to say it. Selena's thieves breaking into Bruce's house and finds out he's the Batman. I mean what the fuck? Vandal,
how many times during this arc did they say he's immortal?
Right, exactly.
They hammered it home.
The one thing that I was on board with in here was that Catwoman is feeling pretty vengeful. She's being written that way. And, I mean, she's been through a lot over the course of quite a while now, going all the way back to Father Valley through Valmont and him dying and going to jail and all of it. So that part, is the Catwoman part, her personality, I'm all there for it. But the rest of it was a serious letdown, man. Fantastic cover. The story was okay. It was just, there was so much anticlimactic ending here that just, I mean, I guess it's supposed to be dramatic. The guy finding Bruce Wayne's apartment, just like walking in and seeing all of his shit there. But I mean, that part just pissed me off. I'm going to give it a 6 out of 10.
Yeah. Well, fuck, you gave it higher than I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. That the whole
being nice.
Like, there's parts of it I definitely liked, but they were minor to the story.
Yeah.
The parts I didn't like were major to the story, so it really rubbed me the wrong way.
You and me both.
Yeah.
So it sucked. Let's just say it, Rob. It sucked. Say it. No. Say it.
I can't. No. No. Not this way.
All right, man. So I guess we will shoot on over to the last book this week. I think it's the last book. Yeah. It's the last book. Supergirl Special Number 1, written by Mariko Tamaki, art from Skylar Patridge, colors Marissa Louise, and Becca Carey on letters with the Jamal Campbell cover. And ooh-wee, is that pretty. I mean, it is flipping gorgeous.
I mean, it's Jamal Campbell. You can't go wrong.
No, you can't. And it makes me love her costume even so much more. I dig it anyway, but still, just looked awesome. So, big book, right? 40-something pages. But this is how we sum this book up, because this is essentially it. The book is basically Supergirl feeling ugh about everyone constantly comparing her to Power Girl, and it's about how she deals with it, which is not well. It talks about her whole life, even when she was in Argo and Krypton, the harder that she tried, the harder that she failed. It ends with her and Power Girl getting over their issues with one another, and they do so over cupcakes. It was written well. I just don't know, like, about that story. It wasn't there for me. I guess it just seemed pretty pointless. But I know Power Girl just had a special, so I guess they needed to do one for Supergirl, too. There's nothing wrong with it. It just wasn't interesting. For others, it will be, if history speaks. The art's fantastic. The cover is even better. I thought it was a good issue. 7.5 out of 10.
Pretty much 100% with you. Like, we've had various members of the Super Family, each one going through their own identity crisis,
mm-hmm.
and they all seem to be the same, and I think they just need to go to family therapy.
Right.
If they're having Sunday brunch together or family dinners on a regular basis, you think at some point they'd talk to each other.
You would think. It's like, we need to communicate, damn it.
Yeah, especially if you're a super team and the fate of Metropolis and the world is depending on you working as a family. Like,
I think it'd
be a bit nicer than that. I completely get the whole Kara and Paige also aka, wow, I forgot the acronym, aka Karen. That whole scenario there with the identity crisis there, I get that, especially for Paige,
right,
being the one from Earth 2, that's not even her Earth. For Kara, it's really weird, but I guess it's also like Paige is an older one and they try to one up each other without even trying, so it's an awkward one. But I'm also just kind of tired of these stories. We've gotten so many. We just had a whole arc from Paige dealing with the exact same thing, and it ended with her and Kara burying the hatchet and hugging it out, being okay, yeah, we're family, we're sisters, we're the same person but we're sisters, and just being happy with each other and coming to terms with the fact that they're both here, they both exist, they both have their own lives, and they can both be happy. But then we get this, and it's the exact same story, just from Kara's perspective, despite the fact that they also...
This time, they don't just hug it out. They do so over cupcakes.
They do so over cupcakes, yeah. Which is perfectly fine. Cupcakes are great. But they also reference that story with Paige, where Supergirl and Power Girl hugged it out. So it's really confusing. The story was interesting. It was a nice deep dive on Kara's history and her character arc, but all ultimately kind of pointless. Some good moments, but yeah, it just give us something new. You know,
yeah,
why does everybody have the same story about various members of the super family?
I would love to see more stories about Power Girl and Supergirl, as long as it moves past I don't want to be Power Girl or Supergirl.
Yeah.
You so know. Go ahead and do that then. Let Supergirl have all of the other shit and let Power Girl change who she is.
Or let's have a team-up book called Supergirls.
No, she's trying to get away from that.
But they're both Supergirl.
No, they're not.
If you say one's Power Girl, I swear to God. She was Supergirl on Earth too, damn it.
One's Power Girl.
You're Power Girl.
She's Power Girl. Paige the Power Girl.
Paige the Power Girl.
Paige the Power Girl.
Can I also say, like, I read that story. The backup was, like, that whole scenario was fun. It was interesting. But I think I'm missing the point. Like, I like the name Paige and everything, but I think I'm missing the reasoning why she had to change her name from Karen Starr.
I would imagine it's part of her
identity crisis.
Yeah, because I mean, think about it. Kara, Karen.
Like, I get that. Real cool. That's also like that was her birth name.
I mean, I know.
Like the whole thing with Kara keeping the name Kara is to hold on to her Kryptonian heritage, I thought.
Oh, I wouldn't be able to tell you that.
Paige would have done the same thing. But I don't know. I don't know. Maybe I got to reread that story to, like, maybe I'm just missing the point.
Maybe
I like the name Paige. I think it's a great, a great move for the character, but I just don't understand it completely. So, whatever. Neither here nor there. Yeah. As for this issue, though, this book, honestly, it's not that bad. It's an enjoyable read. It's not that bad. It's just, it feels like we're getting too much of this.
Yeah, for sure. That's what I'm saying.
7.5 out of 10, like, definitely worth a checkout if you really like Supergirl, but if you don't care that much about Supergirl the Superfam, I wouldn't worry about this issue.
No.
End of the day.
Yeah. Unless you call yourself a Supergirl fan, you could probably skip it. But it's not bad.
Yeah, it's still an enjoyable read. It's just you get the same story elsewhere.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess that's our top three now, huh? Out of the 4 to 6 we are going to count there. I guess mine's going to be... Yeah, mine is going to be Supergirl Special and then Detective Comics, and that's going to have Spirit World number 6 out at the top because it was just great. And I'm going to go a little cheap on my favorite moment, but I'm calling it the cover of Supergirl. It was just that good. I loved it.
Fair enough.
I try to be. Most
for me, most of the time. Number 3, Return of Superman 30th Anniversary Special. Then Spirit World number 6, and number 1, Detective Comics 1076. Favorite moments? Actually, I had quite a few. But if I had to pick one that stuck out at me the most was Tim just running through those villains single-handedly. I thought that was really cool.
Yes.
Even though that issue, if we were still doing the biggest stinker, would be my biggest stinker, but
oh yeah,
that,
for sure.
That moment was really cool.
It really was. Single-handed, yeah. One-page proof that he is the best Robin.
Yeah.
He just did that, and he's admittedly the least fight proficient of the Robins. Yeah. And he just did that. So he's as smart and good as a detective as Bruce Wayne, and he's enough to take out 6 to 8 bad guys all at one time.
Yeah.
Best Robin.
Yeah.
Case closed. Done. Rob, I'm going to need you to admit that in Discord.
I already admitted that he's the best Robin, but Dick will be second best Robin.
That's fine.
Okay.
If you need to do that to yourself, for yourself.
That's fine. I can admit after this, Tim is the best Robin, Dick is the second best Robin.
Thank you.
And then Damien's the third.
And so Jason might not be one, like, as soon. Yeah.
So you can agree with that list then?
No, but
why?
Because you still have Nightwing on there as a Robin.
Damn, I was so close. All right.
No. That's crazy talk.
All right, well, folks, that is our show. Thank you for joining us. Yeah. This week, but
yeah,
can't complain. It was still a fun time.
Not a bad time at all. But like Rob said, we are gonna get out of here. That means you have to as well. So be careful out there, and remember, in the Geek Matrix, everybody has a home. In the Geek Matrix, you are not alone.